Okay, again, our presenters today are Andrea Levant from the National Collaborative on Workforce and Disability for Youth and Anne Guerra from the Nevada Sierra In-Home Support Services Public Authority and Free Center for Independent Living. So, Andrea, you can start.
Okay, great. Well, hello, everyone. Actually, this isn't Orlando, Florida, but I'm honored to chat with you all today about personal assistance services. This presentation is actually based off of a toolkit that my organization co-wrote in conjunction with the Office of Disability Employment Policy through the U.S. Department of Labor. And so there's a fantastic toolkit that goes along with this presentation that I encourage you to visit our website, which is down at the bottom, ncwdyouth.info, in order to download the toolkit as well. So feel free to ask any questions as we go along in one manner or another, and here we go. So basically, just starting out with the basics of personal assistance services, which is what PAS, and from now on I'll try to use that term. It's basically become known within the disability community to refer to someone or more than one person who assists a person with a disability and performing certain tasks during the course of the day that he or she cannot perform on his or her own. One thing before I go too far in depth, I want to let you all know that I'll definitely be using some personal stories and stories of other colleagues that I have that utilize personal assistance services. This isn't me speaking from a lofty position, but more or less from my own personal experiences as a person with a physical disability that requires daily use of personal assistance services. So just wanted you to know that right away. So there are a variety of terms definitions used for personal assistance services, and different organizations and government associations use different terms. But basically, it's kind of just what we said before, just assistance with a variety of daily activities, as the Medicaid definition is a range of human assistance provided to persons with disabilities and chronic conditions of all age that helps them to accomplish tasks that they wouldn't be able to do on their own due to their disability. So that's more or less the basic definition for PAS. Did I skip one? Oh, yes, I did. Okay, sorry. So the first thing is to really think about when it comes to considering a personal assistant or services is just thinking about the fact that obviously it's preparing you to transition and live independently. And, you know, as people with disabilities, there are definitely other things that we have to think about when we are preparing to move out of the comfort of our parent or guardian's home into what we know is normal, into you know, living on our own. And so, you know, beyond thinking about, you know, housing and college and other things like that, you have to also think about what it's going to take for you to live on your own. And so, you know, you just want to start asking friends and family what it takes to be more independent. And then kind of do a needs assessment of sorts, research and think about, you know, the finances, personal aspects of what it's going to take for you to live on your own and really start assessing what it is that you need help with. And it's really important to be honest and realistic with yourself, you know. And we have within the toolkit, there's an assessment that you can do to just help you think from, you know, the start of your day when you open your eyes in the morning to when you close your eyes at night. what are the things that you're going to need assistance with? You know, is it going to be getting out of the bed? Is it going to be, you know, preparing meals? Is it going to be feeding yourself? Is it going to be, you know, putting on clothes to in the middle of the day? If there are particular needs that you have, it's important to think about what those needs are, and then obviously think about how long that might take. And a lot of times we don't think about those things because we just do them, or we have someone that helps us do them and it's become routine. So it's important to start thinking about what you're able to do yourself or are willing to do on your own, and then what you're going to need help with. And then think about your own preferences as it relates to a personal assistant. Are there things that you are not willing to compromise on and things that you are willing to compromise on? For example, if it's that you want a non-smoker and that's something that you just must have, then those are things that you want to start thinking about as well. So then this kind of says what I just said, what tasks are you going to need help with? Is it going to be just be on your own services? But, you know, we talk about activities of daily living. Are you going to need help with keeping things in order, cleaning, you know, making the bed? There's also things that we call queuing. So it may not necessarily be that you can't do certain things on your own, but it's just that you may need someone to remind you to take your medicine, something like that. So what are the tasks that you're going to need help with? How long are you going to need help? How many hours in a day do you think that you'll need someone? How will you manage your schedule to ensure that you receive the assistance that you need? So, for example, you know, For me, that requires consistency in my schedule to ensure that if I tell someone, you know, I need you to come from 10 p.m. to 12, you know, o'clock at night, then that means that my schedule has to be such that I'm home by 10 o'clock at night every night. And then start considering how many assistants you have, especially, you know, if you're going to require 24 hours a day, or if you're going to need, you know, a couple hours in the morning, a couple hours at night. Will you consider maybe having someone different in the morning? Or, like for me, I have one person that helps me during the week, and I have a different person that comes during the weekend. So things like that that you'll want to consider as well. Oh, goodness. I'm sorry. Okay. So the other huge thing to think about when you are preparing to transition into utilizing PAS is how you're going to cover the cost. And it really continues to be, among myself and my colleagues, one of the big things that we have to think about constantly, even when it relates to, you know, our own employment. How are we going to pay for the services that we need? And there are a few different ways that they can be covered. Number one is cash benefits. So payments go to qualified consumers or their representative payees. So basically that means that there is someone that's literally giving you the money, and then you are paying them yourself. So in my case, when I was in college, the Department of Voc Rehab gave me money every month that then I paid someone myself, and I had to keep tax forms and have an employer ID and actually do the taxes for the person. So that was what they did. They gave me the cash, and then I paid them. Another is vendor payments. So it's a case where a case manager determines how much and the type of services that you're going to receive and arranges for them to be paid directly. So basically that means that for you, no money is changing hands. You aren't seeing the money at all. In some cases with Voc Rehab, which I've also had, I utilized an agency that provided my personal assistant and the agency. And so Voc Rehab sent a check directly to that agency, so I didn't have anything to do with the money. And then also, I know, like right now, there's a variety of programs through Medicaid that do the same thing. And then vouchers, which are also similar, where funds are authorized, a consumer uses funds that are authorized for those purposes. So it's all similar, and a lot of them are the same and kind of complicated to distinguish each, but mainly the difference is whether you're paying the person, whether they're paying, whether an agency or whatever is paying them, or any variation of that. So like it says down here at the bottom, it's best to talk to someone in your state and or county, because it certainly depends on the area that you're in as to how a particular program might provide the funds for that. And then continuing on in terms of covering the cost, obviously for a large number of people, paying out of pocket or your private funds is probably the most common way that people pay for personal assistance services, especially if you get to a place where you are not eligible for benefits in one manner or another. So private funds, a lot of people pay out of pocket. One thing I wanted to mention is that I have a friend that, for example, was moving, or she was going away to do an internship, and although originally Voc Rehab wasn't paying at the time for her personal assistant, when she went away to do the internship, she got them to do it basically just letting them know that this is going to enable her to ultimately get a job. And so they agreed to pay for her personal assistant services even when she was away doing this particular internship. So it's really just important to kind of be creative when you're looking for funding to cover your personal assistance. Some private health insurance companies will pay for it. I haven't found one yet, but I'm sure that there are some that will. And then obviously federal and state funded programs like Medicaid, Voc Rehab that we talked about, Social Security, and then other state funds. And employers, by law, are not obligated to pay for your personal assistance unless it's particularly job-related. But in general, there definitely are cases where I have friends that have negotiated it, having a personal assistant into their contract in order for them to effectively do their jobs. So that's definitely an option as well. So there are a variety of ways that you can search for a personal assistant. Like I said, no one-size-fits-all method. I think the main thing is just to be aware of what tends to work in your communities for anything else as it relates to a job. So, you know, there are registries online, independent living centers. You definitely want to look for places where people, where there already might be people that are interested in that particular type of work. So if there are any schools in the area, that's a great way to do it. I found the best PAS personal assistants when I was in school, or now I live near a college, and so it works really well for me because I only need, you know, a couple hours in the morning and a couple of hours at night, and so that's really good because a lot of times college student schedules are not, they're flexible and they're not looking for a full-time job, they're looking for something just to make some extra money. So colleges are great places to look for personal assistance as well. Of course, just like with anything else, you want to beware of places like Craigslist and stuff. However, I definitely know of people that have had success on there. You just have to be very, very careful with when you're posting on the internet in terms of your screening, which we'll talk about shortly. So you're going to think about the types of things that you need from your assistant and what you want the job to entail. And in the toolkit that I mentioned, there are sample ads, there are sample job descriptions, that will help you write through and then think about, or write up and think through everything that you need, and then ultimately will help you create an ad and stuff. So I think that's a great tool. And then another big thing is to understand the going wage in your community for work like this. So, you know, you're considering cost of living, you're considering what the average person would make for that type of job in your area. So it's definitely going to vary. And then, like it says, just be assertive and be creative in your efforts. I know a lot of people that actually, myself, and I have quite a few people that have found their personal assistants at churches, you know, community boards, those types of things. So kind of think out of the box when you're looking for your personal assistant. And again, these are just more things to think about in terms of what you want your personal assistant to do. Again, we talked about time already. How many do you want? And then here we have lists of other things. I see Mallory, and I'll, 1 second. Good question. Do you want your assistant to help prepare your meals, clean your place, do your shopping? Those are other things that you want to think about. So how would you find what the going wage is? Is it normal to pay hourly, weekly, et cetera? A big way, one way is even to call any of the services in your area that provide home health services and see kind of what they're paying. That's one way to do it. Another, in terms of how to pay, is it normal to pay hourly, weekly, et cetera? Well, I guess the other thing that I was going to say do is just if you have any peers that are paying or friends that have paid people in the past, you want to consider that. Obviously, you want to consider what the minimum wage is and pay. Obviously, you don't want to pay the minimum, but those are just things to keep in mind when you're thinking about what you're going to pay a person and thinking about, you know, what is going to be competitive and what your needs are. In terms of hourly, weekly, et cetera, I think it depends on, again, on your needs. If you're, I think it's good to develop consistency. I think that's the main thing throughout. So if you're going to do it per day, I myself pay per day because so that there's a set amount, because sometimes it's difficult, you know, if one day you need 1 hour and the next day you need, you know, 2 hours, it's good to set because a lot of times for people, when it comes, for example, to my personal assistant, if it's varied too much, then it's income that they can't necessarily count on, if that makes sense to you. So for example, okay, one morning I may need 30 minutes, one morning I may need an hour. I just go ahead and set a $25 a day, you know, or $30 a day, no matter what, so that she can count on that every day. But I know people that do it differently. I know people that pay every month. I know people that pay weekly. So it's really just about making sure that it's consistent. I think the main thing that you want to keep in mind when it comes to your services or personal assistance services is that you are an employer, and this is a job. It's not. And don't take it for anything less than that. Nobody is doing you a favor. You, as a person, as an employer, deserve the best treatment. You deserve the best service. You're certainly worth it, and we're all as people with disabilities worthy of having that. And so you don't want to settle. You want to make sure that you create a schedule. You want to create guidelines, contracts, all of those things, so that when a person comes in, they understand that this is a job. And so if you make it too lackadaisical, even when it comes to pay, then people will take it as such. So just whatever you set in stone from the beginning is what you want to consistently do. Does that help? You can let me know. Okay, yeah, great. Okay. So this piece is about service dogs, and I honestly don't have one, but my colleague that helped her write this particular toolkit has one, and so she wanted to, you know, put in here even just the fact that service dogs are really helpful when it comes to services that you may need. And a growing number of people with disabilities have come to rely on these animals, and there's different names. Some are called service dogs, some assistance dogs, but really, you know, just helping people with their day-to-day needs, and I know her dog is great in terms of helping her pick up things, and then depending on your disability in terms of alerting as it relates to things like epilepsy and stuff like that. So one thing to just be cognizant of course, first is thinking about whether are you even a pet person? Do you want a dog? Do you want to make that time commitment? And then, of course, it's another cost. And there are programs that you can look into when it comes to considering a service dog. So that's just a side note. So in terms of identifying your personal assistant needs, you want to think about asking open-ended questions rather than yes or no. So, for example, you're not going to say, do you like taking care of people? And they would say yes. You would say, why are you interested in this position? What makes you feel that you would do well in this position? So that you are asking questions where you can get more, you can even ask more questions after that and get to know the person. Because the fact of the matter is these are going to be people that you are extremely intimate with in terms of, you know, they're coming into your house, they're coming into your space. And so you want to, from the beginning, figure out whether there's a rapport and that it's going to be someone that you're comfortable with talking with, comfortable with, you know, sharing with, things like that. So from the beginning, you want to see if there's that conversational relationship. But you do want to be consistent. And the other thing that I just want to say is that you want to be consistent and you don't want to appear desperate, because then from the beginning, it kind of puts the ball in their court. And again, you are the employer. They're the one that's seeking a position from you. And I've made the mistake of, oh, yes, 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 please, I really need you. I want you to come. Great, I'll adjust my schedule, I'll do whatever I need to do. And so then it ultimately turned out that the person took advantage of me and of the situation. So you want to make sure that from the beginning you're consistent with each person, that you're asking similar questions so that then you can ask more questions, but also so that you can compare each interview. And don't end the telephone call by setting up an interview time and date. Let them know that you'll call them back, so that way you can put each person next to another, one candidate next to another, and judge and think about it and not make any snap judgments or opinions. So in-person interviews are going to help you to see whether the person can perform the duties required and whether your personalities are compatible. Then you want to consider body language, facial expressions, attentiveness, and talkativeness. And just because all of those things will help you figure out whether you all are going to be able to get along, whether, you know, and especially because the tasks when it relates to PAS sometimes may not be the most comfortable. And you don't want to feel uncomfortable in your own space, in your own home. So if it looks like they're not going to be comfortable with potentially dealing with bodily fluid, then that's something that, you know, you may not want that particular person. So it's very important to be upfront about all of your needs and see how they react to those things. When you're first meeting with them, make sure to meet in a public place and consider having a friend with you, or a family member. They're really good at, especially those that have performed those services for you, because they can provide kind of an outside perspective and help you make a better decision. And then you just want to, I'm going to try to speed it up a little bit more because, you know, I don't have way too much time. But You definitely want to follow up with references. Make sure that you do that again, just developing that consistency and showing the importance to the person. And then, because again, it's such an intimate situation and they'll be in your home, you want to make sure that you do everything up front to ensure that you're going to have a good experience. So do background checks and driving record checks and things like that just to make sure. And then develop a contract. So basically everything that you set out from the beginning, whether it is, you know, that you're going to pay them hourly, that they're going to come at specific times, you know, the things that they will and won't do and the things that you will and won't do. Make that known from the beginning because that's what you can always come back to. Mutual respect is essential. And I just you'll learn that you also earn more respect from your employee if you actively show him her or her your respect and appreciation. And that's very, very true. From the beginning, just show your appreciation, your respect for them. But again, just remember the roles in terms of managing your employee. Communication is certainly the key. And flexibility is the key. I mean, the main thing is that, you know, it's not such a rigid 9-to-5. So, you know, for example, for me, tonight it's Friday night and I'm going to go out with friends until I ask my caregiver to come a little bit later. And, you know, she's okay with that. Flexibility is certainly good and vice versa for them. But you just don't want to get so much out of routine that it makes it difficult to manage your schedules and situations. So make sure that you introduce them to the people that are important to you, too, especially in case of any sort of emergencies. Discuss concerns or problems as they develop, and because it certainly does. Tension in situations that involve personal assistance services is no fun because these are people, depending on the type of service that you required, if it's every day, these are the people that you're going to wake up to every morning, and these are the people that you're going to go to sleep to at night as they're turning off your lights. And so you want to make sure that you talk things out and you know, consider any concerns or what have you as soon as possible so that it doesn't make it awkward. And definitely think through those awkward moments. And basically what that means is those times if there's an accident, if there, you know, just as anything could happen. And you want to make sure that you start thinking about those types of things and how you're going to handle them. So here you go in terms of paying. Your employees, different factors impact how your personal assistant costs will be covered, and we talked about that earlier. Just consider laws, policies, and procedures in your state again. So definitely look into it within your state if you're going to be working with voc rehab, if you're going to be working with Medicaid, different things like that. And if you're going to even be paying out of pocket, then you have to consider taxes and what kind of employer taxes you may have to pay. And if you're the type of person that doesn't particularly love dealing with money like I am, then, you know, you may want to consider having someone that handles the payment piece, so that can do your accounting for you or what have you, because that can be tricky. Make sure that you know the reporting requirements of the funding source. So if it's voc rehab and they need you to send in the timesheets every month, then that's what you need to do. So definitely keep organized records. Give feedback often. Do not save praise or criticism for evaluations. I mean, just like in any job, we certainly all love to hear, you know, good things. And then constructive criticism is never a bad thing, but you want to make it as such constructive. And it's always good to add this is what you're doing well, and these are things that, you know, I was thinking maybe could we do this. differently. It's just like, again, it's a job. It's a situation where, you know, there's benefit on both ends. You want to keep those copies so that they can use those in the future. And if feedback evaluations do not improve performance, give a written warning that things need to improve by a certain date. I know, for example, with my friend that wrote this particular guide, she talked about an instance where she had a caregiver that didn't recognize the importance of the fact that she really is, you are your own decision maker. And a lot of times, sometimes as people with disabilities, people try to take advantage of or are what they consider to potentially be vulnerability. And so she ended up having to let someone go because they felt like she needed to, she had a bad cough. And the cough resulted, and so they wanted her to go to the emergency room. And she was trying to let them know that, you know, she was perfectly fine, that she didn't need to go. She knows her body, and she didn't need to go. And they ended up insisting and calling the authorities, and it escalated very far beyond what it needed to be because the assistant did not take into consideration what she knew about herself. And so I tell that story just to say that, you know, it's important to emphasize the fact that you are the decision maker, that you know yourself, and ultimately you're responsible for you. So set those boundaries in the beginning and let them know them those boundaries so that you can properly go through, you know, evaluations, anything like that, and then go from there. Abuse, avoiding abuse, it can come in so many different forms. I could tell you stories and don't even want to enter into them of different things that have happened. But, you know, especially you want to think through giving your bank account information, cash, money, checks, credit cards to anyone because that's definitely a way that you can be taken advantage of, you know, when you're thinking about how many keys that you're giving out. You know, you want to be cognizant, aware of that type of thing. And just watch, be aware, be open to what's going on, mannerisms. That's why all of that, is the background checks and everything, are so important to do at the beginning so that hopefully you won't deal with anything later on that's negative. And this is basically, I mean, unfortunately, this happens where you have to fire, get rid of a personal assistant. I don't think I've had that issue before. I've been pretty fortunate, but I certainly know people. I'm still fairly young, and I know people that have, you know, had assistants for 30, you know, plus years. And so there are definitely times when that happens, whether it be that their performance isn't acceptable, if they're really late, you know, or they don't show up for work, or, for example, they smoke, or this says poor personal hygiene, anything that may not work for you, or they, like, this is the example of what I told you earlier with the friend. The personal assistant doesn't listen to your instructions. She also had an instance where one of her personal assistants was really negative toward her dog. She, you know, kicked the dog's toys around and things like that. And that was a sign to her that, you know, that wasn't someone that she wanted to care for her every day, because her dog is extremely important to her. It's a family member to her just as much as, you know, others are. And so that was a reason for termination in that particular case. And I think I'm over to Anne.
Okay. Thank you so much. That was fabulous. And I'm just going to talk a little bit about the IHSS program. And of course, everything that Andrea said so far is true in the IHSS program as well. But in California, We have IHSS, which is the In-Home Supportive Services Program, which is one of those funding sources, really, that Andrea talked about. And so I thought I would talk a little bit about getting on the program, particularly the assessment. So we have some suggestions here to prepare for that annual assessment. You know, there's a couple of parts to becoming eligible for IHSS, and the first part is the financial eligibility piece, and basically Medi-Cal eligibility matches or, you know, confers financial eligibility for in-home supportive services. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that. The second piece is the need for the services in order to live independently. And that need is determined through this annual assessment that's conducted by a county social worker. So if you're starting out and entering the IHSS program and you're having your first assessment or your second, third, or fourth, which happens annually or close to annually, these are some things to think about. So first, the IHSS social worker does not know about your particular needs. Be clear and specific and realistic. And that's really important. You know, you might think that they can tell by looking at you, or that they meet with so many people they should know. It's really important not to make assumptions about what they understand about you. It's very important to be very clear about what your needs are. Secondly, consider how much time it takes to complete each task and how often each task must be provided. You might want to track your tasks for a month in preparation. That sounds like kind of a big deal. It's really not a bad idea to do this, to actually be able to show that you've put some time into determining what your needs are, and it's based on, you know, data that you've collected. Then be sure you understand the questions. They can affect the number of hours you may be authorized. If necessary, ask the social worker to repeat the questions. Again, you don't want to make assumptions that everything's going well. In terms of the assessment, you want to make sure that you understand what's being asked of you. So let's see, the next one. Thank you. Do not expect hours for services that you are already getting from another source, such as laundry or meals provided by a relative or another agency. And that's because the IHSS program is sort of what they call a safety net program. If there are what are called alternative resources, and that's the terminology that's applied to a situation that's described here where, say, someone else does your laundry. The social worker would look at that and say, well, it looks like you don't need these services for laundry because you already have somebody doing your laundry. Then finally, you can be employed and receive IHSS. If you are currently employed or are considering employment, talk to your social worker about how the services work in terms of your employment. So those are just some specific pieces about getting on to the IHSS program. Once you get on, it's helpful to know the different roles of the different people you'll be working with. The county role is that county social worker who conducts the assessments and assigns hours. And once you've been approved for in-home supportive services, you would get in the mail something called a notice of action that lists the tasks that you've been approved for and the amount of time for each task. So that's an important document to keep with you. And then, you know, we've talked a lot today about finding personal assistance, how to locate people to hire. And if you're in the In-Home Supportive Services Program in California, you live in a county that either has a public authority or another entity that's serving the same function that manages a provider registry. And the registries have people who have applied to work in the IHSS program and who have had some screenings and who have been at least offered IHSS training or training in being a good provider and probably have some training in things like lifting and transferring. You can certainly ask them. Most public authorities offer that kind of training. But another really helpful kind of training that public authorities offer is employer training. So if this is your first opportunity to be the boss and to actually hire someone and be a supervisor and manager of someone, those are some skills that take some time to develop and more than time. It's really helpful to have the kind of tools that you've been offered today. And public authorities offer training that are specific to the IHSS program, many of the same kinds of things that Andrea talked about today, and have different methods of offering that. I know that in our public authority, we do some interactive exercises and kind of help people get more comfortable with the interview process and that kind of thing. Often also public authorities will offer assistance with interviewing if you haven't done it a lot and need some assistance before you're really comfortable in going out on your own. So that's a resource that's available to you. Then speaking of resources, I think our next page lists a number of them, and I'm going to give it back to Andrea to talk about several of these.
Sure. So this is exactly what Ann said, a list of resources that may go in depth specifically as it might relate to finding, as it relates to employing, and have different guides themselves on personal assistance services. I mentioned the Office of Disability Employment Policy, and they are our funders. And they have a variety of resources. National Collaborative on Workforce and Disability for Youth is actually our website, and that is where you can find the personal assistance services toolkit that I mentioned. We have a variety of tools listed by topic, and so if you go on that website and look by topic, there are a host of resources for people with disabilities and those that work with people with disabilities. And so that particular document is on there. And then there's other ones that you can look into as well. I won't go into huge detail since I want to leave time for questions. But basically, there you go right here in terms of resources. And that's our contact info. I don't have anything else to add. Just wanted to open it up for questions if anyone has them.
We'd love to hear your questions. And while we're waiting, I'm just going to go back to Andrea's organization and that toolkit that they provide is really fabulous. I hope everybody gets their hands on one. It's what we've based our training on. It's a really awesome resource.
Thank you. It is. I must say, if I would have known the stuff that was in that toolkit when I was actually in the trenches, it would have been so helpful. Or when I was getting ready to think about it, I just kind of jumped into independent living and had to discover a lot of things on my own through trial and many, many, many errors. So I really encourage you to check it out.
Yeah.
And we're going to do it right now. How exciting.
Oh, there you are.
You want me to go from here? Can I do it from here? Oh, it looks like I can. Here. All right. Put me on the spot.
Andrea, what would you like to do?
Okay, that would. Oh, I was going to go find it for you so you could see this is the website. And, oh, wait, what happened? It is. Did I miss it? Here we go. Making the move to managing your own personal assistance services. So, a toolkit for youth with disabilities. And this is what it looks like right here. You can download it in either PDF or Microsoft Word right here. And there you have it.
Oh, there you go. I will also mention that in terms of IHSS, the final resource on your resource list suggested Disability Rights California that has a great number of tools in just understanding the IHSS program and to help people with appeals, assessments, et cetera.
Great. Thank you, Anne and Andrea. Your presentation there was very useful. I'm sure a lot of youth would access these services and links on the resource section. I don't think at this point there seems to be any questions from the participants. So I think we will end here since it's almost time anyways. I just want to remind the Thank you. I just want to remind the participants that we have another webinar coming up in October on the 27th. It's the Work Incentives and Disability 101 webinar, and you can register at the yodisabledproud.org website. Please make sure to register soon. And again, I'd like to thank Andrea and Anne for your wonderful presentations today. And if you guys have any further questions, the contact information is on the slide. Be sure to contact them directly and ask any specific questions you may have. And again, when you close out on your link, you will be redirected to a survey, a monkey survey, where you can fill out sort of, it's a very simple few questions just to sort of ask how the presentation went, and we will be sure to take all your information and improve on our next webinar. And so we really value that. If you could please fill out the survey, that would be great. Thank you so much for everyone for participating and the presenters. Thank you so much. Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.